Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a whopper of a Wednesday edition. We've already had Al Franken, and we've got Charles Franklin, pollster extraordinaire, joining us at about 4:30 Central Time, going inside the numbers on the newest Wisconsin polling, and it is a horse race in the U.S. senatorial right now in the Democratic primary. Just 3 points, apparently, according to this polling, separate Mandela Barnes and Alex Lassery. We've got approval ratings on everyone from Tony Evers to Rojo. We'll talk about that. And the big lie effectively being polled by Charles Franklin, and confidence in the Gableman, whatever you call what he's doing. Well, that was polled as well. So we'll get to the polling numbers about 4:30. I've got a little taste of some polling, though. Different polling. Morning Consult Politico. And they polled out, my understanding is, you know, questions. What would be disqualifying actions for a candidate? You know, if they did this, that'd be a step too far. Or at least it would be a major problem in your support for that candidate. And they polled Dems and Independents and Republicans. So let's go through just 4 or 5 questions. What if your candidate was accused of sexual misconduct? Is it a major problem? Well, let's not forget the former president of the United States talking about Donald Trump had a few, you know, 20 or so credible accusations against him. And there was an Access Hollywood tape. You know, he just grabbed him by the because he's a big star and they just let him do it. He'd tic-tac up and he'd just kiss him or grab him or grope him or whatever. So clearly that's not a problem for some. But here is what the polling says. Again, political Morning Consult polling. Amongst Democrats, 83% say yes, that's kind of a big deal, a sexual misconduct allegation. Amongst Independents, 77%. Amongst Republicans, nearly a supermajority, 66%, say they'd have a problem with that. When it came to allegations of domestic violence against a candidate, Democrats, 81% said, yeah, that's a problem. 74% of Independents and 67% of Republicans. So no shockers there. But here's where it gets a little shocking. Or at least, you know, telling if nothing else. What if your candidate is accused of making racist remarks? Is that a big problem? If your candidate's just a little racist, drops a couple of N-bombs, is that a problem for you? Amongst Democrats, 80% said, yeah, that's kind of a problem. That's a major problem. Amongst Independents, 59% also take issue with racist remarks. Amongst Republicans, barely gets a 38% of Republicans take issue with racist remarks made by a candidate that they would support. Probably wouldn't even hurt them much. How about homophobia? If it were homophobic remarks, we're down to 25% of Republicans that would react, would even think that that's a big deal. 25% amongst Democrats, it's like 71. Independents, about 50%. How about anti-Semitic behavior? 47% of Republicans have an issue with anti-Semitism. Be a big deal for them. The other 53% of the party, no big deal. Amongst Democrats, it's over 70% that perceive that as a major deal. So we got a little fascistic difference in the parties. You know what I'm saying? There's clearly a contrast here. And I find it very troubling. And back to Big Lie Becky Clayfish. Now, it was just yesterday, day before, I labeled Michael Big Lie Gableman. This big lie, this telling of the big lie. Well, you know, if we talk about what's the worst you could say about your candidate, sexual abuser, domestic violence, hell, a racist, homophobic. Well, among some of those categories, Republicans barely yawn. Got no big issue with that. And you look at the greater tone of the Republican Party right now, right here in the state of Wisconsin, we have this playing out in real time. You got a new entree into the race, this Tim Michaels guy, right? Businessman, kind of Trumpy-like in that regard. Self-funder, although I'm not quite clear that Trump ever self-funded. He made a lot of big claims, at least. But this guy's apparently got millions of dollars, and he could shake up the Republican gubernatorial race. And suddenly, Rebecca Clayfish, as I'm now calling her, Big Lie Becky, she got scared. Clayfish is scared. She's been out there. She thought she'd be the only option. And she wasn't really worried about the Tim Ram Jams. And so far, you know, she's holding her big lead against Kevin Nicholson. But this Michaels, this could be a game changer. Michaels has a solid claim to make as a Republican nominee, and this will be a sprint. She's been at it for years. Michaels can make up all that ground with just millions of dollars spent. Just ask Alex Lazary, right? So this will be getting interesting. But the fact that Rebecca Clayfish is now fully embracive of the rigged election in the state of Wisconsin, and she knows better. They all do. Robin Voss knows better. Rebecca Clayfish knows better. I'm less clear that Rantham knows or believes better, or perhaps even Gableman. God only knows what motivates that man at this late hour. But the candidate, Rebecca Clayfish, knows better, and hell, I suspect this Michaels knows a little bit better. Here is a little bit more from the article at the Journal Sentinel. We'll wrap this up. Clayfish said candidates who don't address the 2020 election should be disqualified in voters' minds. And she was referring to her new Republican opponent, Tim Michaels, a wealthy construction executive from Waukesha County. Michaels held a rally Monday to launch his campaign. Didn't exactly have a smooth rollout. I think Tommy Thompson made his campaign announcement for him. But anyways, had a little rally, gave a little 9-minute speech, and didn't talk about the rigged last election. How dare he leave that out of his launch video? But Michaels said in an interview earlier Monday that he has questions about the 2020 election. Well, of course he does. He's running as a Republican. That's the only way to do it. If you don't bring the fringe into the big tent, small tent, medium-sized tent of the Republican Party, well, you got no chance of winning. And if you look at the engagement level of those that feel like, well, we voted for Trump and we got screwed, it was rigged. To ignore the engagement levels of this massive part of the Republican base, well, it'd be disastrous. And that's why we see people like, you know, Big Lie Becky taking this tact. And to some small end, I mean, I think Ron Johnson is so enamored with the vote totals of Donald Trump back in 16. Ron Johnson said, you know what? I got to go full crazy. I think part of this is an act. I don't think Ron Johnson is a substantially different person than he was back when I used to describe him as country club cordial. You know, if you met him at the grocery store, you wouldn't punch him, probably. You'd think, oh, nice enough guy. He'd probably let you cross, hold the door for you. He's country club cordial, or at least he used to be. But now he sees a solitary path to victory, and that is the encompassing, the incorporation of the big lie, of the fringe, of the engaged Republican base. Because if you can't win them over, you can't win. And you can't win in the Republican Party, apparently, by telling the truth. The truth won't set you free. The truth will cost you the primary. Then you never get a shot at Tony Evers. Again, a quote from this new entree, Tim Michaels. A lot of people have questions about the last election. So do I. He said on a Righty Whitey interview on WISN, If we don't have fair, transparent elections, our whole system is going to come apart. Except that's not a problem. We did have fair, transparent elections. You just don't like the outcome. And we're going to get to some polling. Charles Franklin, again, has got brand new, hot off the presses polling from the state of Wisconsin. They polled Gableman. They polled the big lie. And they also polled Republican confidence in the April spring elections, 2022 elections. Well, Trump wasn't on the ballot. Are they going to have big qualms about the confidence of locally administered elections here in the state of Wisconsin? Might surprise you what the outcome of this new poll is. You're going to have to stick around for that. Here's a quote from Governor Tony Evers' campaign. Kayla Anderson, a campaign spokeswoman for Evers, said Clayfish's comments are injecting more chaos and division into Wisconsin elections. We don't need to waste more time and taxpayer money on this politically motivated exercise. Governor Evers plans to continue doing the right thing and fighting to ensure every eligible voter is able to participate in safe, fair, and secure elections. Now, a spokesman for Clayfish did not immediately answer questions from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we do know, and we reported this here, that Trump successfully pressured the capitulator-in-chief, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, this week into keeping open the taxpayer-funded review of the 2020 election overseen by former Supreme Court Justice Michael Big Lie Gableman. So the handyman, Robin Voss, is a full capitulator to the former president. Rebecca Clayfish comes out here on Wednesday, you know, with the entry of a new candidate into the gubernatorial pool, and she's scared. Becky is scared. She's running scared, and she's running towards the big lie in the rigged elections because she knows she needs the rest of the base. She's got to be more MAGA than Rantham, perhaps. But this all makes me quite amused because it will make Rebecca Clayfish nearly unelectable in a general election. I think it makes all of them unelectable. Anyone that's still questioning the outcome of the 2020 election, I mean, would you hire that person to work for you? Even conservatives, really, if you can't be convinced by evidence and numbers and math and audits, and Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty reports and Legislative Audit Bureau reports, what the hell does it take to convince you of something? You know, like facts, not fiction. Come back, trying to tell the truth since like 10 years ago. What's that, 2012? More Devil's Advocates on the other side.
The Devil's Advocates. Sausage making never looked so good.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. New Marquette University Law School poll and drop today. And whenever it drops, we have the fine pollster extraordinaire Charles Franklin. He joins us in about 10 minutes. But since we're talking Wisconsin, I want to come back and talk about the former Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan did a little panel discussion today, American Enterprise Institute. What, you didn't get invited? Nor I. But anyways, during the panel discussion at the American Enterprise Institute, Paul Ryan revealed that he had been frustrated by Trump's refusal to cut Social Security, Medicare, and other programs. That's pretty sad that Trump had more sense than Paul Ryan. So, you know, the Becky Clayfishes of the world that would go running towards the big lie in the rigged election, right? Well, let's consider what the old Republican mantra was. Let's cut Social Security, Medicare, and all the other programs. Here's Paul Ryan's quote. He and I fought about Medicare and entitlement reform all the time, and it became clear to me that there was no way he wanted to reach then other than making good on a promise on repeal and replace, you know, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And it wasn't popular in his mind, said the former speaker. No kidding, Sherlock? Repealing Social Security, reforming Medicare and other programs, they're not popular? It wasn't popular in his mind, the former speaker continued, and therefore, it wasn't going to be pursued. That was always really frustrating to me. Ah, you're such a soulless bastard, Paul Ryan. A little bit more. That was always really frustrating to me, but that gives you an example of where the right is now, which is either we don't touch it or we reform it, but repealing it is not in the cards. You want to repeal Medicare, Paul? That's what you're stuck on? No wonder you're no longer the speaker. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, he went on the Foxy News. I think he was on Hannity. And he talked about the Democrats in the race against him. I'm going to quote here from Ron Johnson. I would just point out, unironically, I got invited on Fox News last Saturday. And here in the upper Midwest where I live, weather hasn't really gotten nice yet this year. It's been quite cold, still quite cold. Except last Saturday, it was supposed to be like 78 fun-loving degrees. Beautiful, gorgeous weather, sunny. And Crudy said, no way in hell am I suiting up and going on the Foxy News on the nicest day of the year. So now I got a quandary because I've been invited back on the Fox News. Oh, couldn't do last weekend. How about this weekend? Got called during the earlier show break. And, you know, now I got a strong consideration because, you know, I'm going to go party on Saturday night with some of my college roomies and they want me Sunday. I'm not sure if I'm going to blow off Fox News again. I'm strongly considering it. And I am a media whore. If you didn't notice, I usually accept every interview invitation. You know, kind of like Ron Johnson. He and I, media whores, we have that in common. And if he's going to go on Fox News, why not Crudy going on Fox News? Because someone's got to go clean up the messes, right? Go try telling a little truth on the Fox News channel. But still, man, I'm going to be pretty hungover on Sunday morning. I'm not sure if I want to get out of bed for Fox News. But Rojo got up for Fox News. Here's what he had to say. According to his own campaign press release, Senator Ron Johnson discusses Democratic dark money spending in Wisconsin Senate race on the Foxy News. I guess he got up. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, Republican from Wisconsin, appeared on Foxy News with Hannity last night, where he discussed the Democrat dark money groups running ads against him in Wisconsin. Excerpts are below. Here's Ron, his campaign, quoting, you know, the candidate. Sean, so far I've been outspent by about $19.3 million to $5 million, and I don't even have a Democrat opponent, my bad. He would never call them a Democratic opponent. But what I have is a media that have been trying to take me out for the last 18 months, so I'm going to need a lot of help. Ron Johnson for Senate.com. If you want me to continue to pursue these investigations, you know, Hillary's emails, Benghazi, Hunter Biden's laptop, hydroxychloroquine, those are all the fine hearings that Ron has spearheaded. I'll need that financial help. Ron Johnson for Senate.com. Hannity, where's this money targeted against you coming from? Do we know? Rojo, well, it's coming from those dark money groups that the Democrats just hate until they tap into and use to try and engage in the politics of personal destruction. Now, you do that mostly to yourself, Ron. That is what is so despicable about this, Sean. They just lie. They distort and they engage in the politics of personal destruction. I mean, talking about projection, Ron. A little bit more. They can't run on their record, obviously. Well, as you pointed out, Ron, there is no nominee selected yet. So, you know, the Democrats will be glad to run on their record as opposed to your record in the Senate, Ron. Oh, I think they're clamoring to run against your record. Here's what Rojo told Hannity last night. They can't run on their record, obviously. They can't run on their open borders and 40-year high inflation and record gas prices and the embarrassing and dangerous surrender in Afghanistan. All they can do is tear other people down like me. You know he's talking about himself, right? Victim. Big victim, Rojo. That is what they do. They do it quite effectively, which is why I need your help. And a third plea for cash. Ron Johnson for Senate.com. And one more reminder here. A new report this week detailed how a coalition of Wisconsin residents that has been running TV attack ads against U.S. Senator Ron Johnson is in front for a massive dark money group based in D.C. It says OpportunityWisconsin.com. doesn't actually exist on paper. The name is a business alias for the North Fund, which is more than 600 miles away in Washington, D.C. So Ron wants to point out, you know, this is a real dark money group, D.C.-based. They don't actually live in Wisconsin. Well, Ron, you know, maybe they don't have a private jet like you do, flying back and forth to D.C. Don't you spend more than half your time in D.C., Ron? Dreaded D.C., that swamp. Come back. Ron Johnson's approval ratings brought to you by fine pollster extraordinaire Charles Franklin. He joins me next. Stick around. I know you will.
Of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a whopper of a Wednesday edition. I promise you, I got a fine guest. He's joined live via Zoom. He is Charles Franklin, pollster extraordinaire, Marquette University Law School polling. And Charles, I always appreciate when the new polls drop, you usually accommodate, make time for the Devil's Advocates. It is a rarity when I don't find you here, like in the happy hour, like you know, now, sir. Welcome back.
You got to make time for the devil when the devil calls.
Well, Charles, you come bearing interesting polling news. We got a horse race going on in the U.S. senatorial. I guess it's the Dem race because they haven't yet picked a nominee to go up against Ron Johnson. But amongst the Dem, lots of candidates. And suddenly we've got a horse race, at least amongst the top two. Where did they stand, Charles?
Yeah, it's tightened since where it was in February when we last polled. Mandela Barnes is still in first place at 19%, but Alex Lazary is at 16%. Sarah Godlewski at 7%, Tom Nelson at 5%. We also asked about all 11 candidates, but none of the others reached more than one percentage point of support. For Barnes, that's a little bit of a drop from 23 in February to 19 now, while Lazary has climbed from 13 to 16, and Godlewski has gone up from 3 to 7, though Nelson did not move. Now, I got to say the margin of error here is plus or minus 6.6 percentage points, so these are numbers with a margin of error around them. Don't forget that. But I do think we see a tightening of the race. Interestingly, though, 48% are still undecided in this race. So there are an awful lot of votes sitting out there to still be picked up by somebody. This is far from over.
Charles.
Yes. Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt, sir. Did you poll the U.S. senatorial candidates in the same way as you had prior? Last time I thought you had asked some questions, basically, had you heard of this man or woman? Different ways of asking the questions. Did they change between the polls, Charles?
Right. No, we asked exactly the same questions about the top four candidates from the February poll, but we did not ask the favorability and name recognition for the other seven candidates, since none of them got past one percentage point in vote support. I think we can probably safely assume that they're name recognitions have not changed very much either over that time. If we had seen anyone start to break out and start getting 3 or 4% or 5% of the vote, then we certainly would go back and ask about favorability about them next time.
Charles, let's talk about the other big, nominee race, the Republican race for the gubernatorial nomination. And it had been a pretty well-formed race. We knew Rebecca Clayfish, effectively the front runner. And then we had Kevin Nicholson, this businessman. Well, he was trailing. And then we had, Rantham back in the ether somewhere. But a new entree into the race. And you bemoaned, if anything, as we booked this fine appearance by you, Charles, you said, well, I wish they'd have given us some heads up. We would have polled to Michaels. So Michaels didn't appear in the poll.
No, because he didn't announce that he was getting into the race until the poll was more than half finished. So at that point, it's way too late to go back and add someone halfway through the survey, more than halfway through. here, there's been very little change, though, among the three that we've asked both times. Clayfish is at 32, Nicholson at 10, Ramtin at 4. Those first two went up by 2 points apiece from last time. Ramtin went down by a point. And 46% say they don't know who they'll support. So with Michaels entering the race and 46% of the votes still on the table, there's certainly the potential for that to shake up the race. The other thing is that he's apparently buying a very substantial amount of advertising here this week to kick off his
campaign. Already started seeing his ads on television locally here in the Madison market. Michaels is up on the air.
The report I saw was something over $800,000 in the first week. So that's a big buy. And on the Democratic side, remember, Lasry and to a lesser extent, Godlewski have been advertising recently, and they both seem to have benefited from that by moving up in the polls. So we'll see. Also, Rebecca Clayfish could start advertising with Michael's entry and Nicholson, too. So the bottom line is, I wish he had made up his mind a week earlier. It would have made my life easier, which is all that really matters. But we'll have him in the poll next time, and we'll see how much he really has shaken up the race or whether Clayfish's support actually is pretty solid and his entry may not upend things. We'll just have to wait and see.
Folks, you are listening to the Devils Advocates Radio Show. I got pollster extraordinaire from Marquette University Law School polling, Charles Franklin. Charles, I haven't seen Tony Evers' ads up, maybe a few, but he was also polled, not head-to-head with any of the Republicans, but against his own approval-disapproval ratings. So what do the voters of Wisconsin, or those polled by the Marquette Law School, what's their interpretation of Governor Evers?
Evers is still in a net positive position, not enormously so, but steadily so. So in this sample, 49% approve of the job he's doing, 43 disapprove, a net plus 6. In February, it was 50-41, so a net plus 9. So it's a little bit narrower now, but still net positive. But on his handling of coronavirus, an issue that might come up in the fall, 60% approve now, 38 disapprove. And that's a big boost from last asked in October when it was 53-40. So I think Republicans see shutdowns and school closures and things as something Evers is vulnerable on. But on just how's he handled coronavirus, he's pretty positive and has been throughout the pandemic. And on education, an issue that we're seeing a lot of talk about and considerable concern on, 51% approve of how Evers has handled education, 38 disapprove. So a net positive there. And finally, on the question of, is Tony Evers someone who cares about people like you? 54% say he does care. 40% say that's not who he is. So across all of these net positive numbers, not overwhelmingly so, but pretty solidly so, and in every dimension we asked about.
Charles Franklin, now I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you recall back in the summer of 2018 how the incumbent governor, Scott Walker, was doing in the plus-minus approval-disapproval? Let's say June-ish, if you recall.
I don't remember the numbers exactly, but I will tell you that with Governor Walker, what we saw was a consistent 2 or 3 point net approval rating. And when he was going on to victory, that would move up a little bit. And when he went on to defeat, that number went down a bit. His absolute low numbers, though, were actually in 2015, when he was very net negative. He recovered a good bit from that by 2018, but of course not entirely, and he didn't go on to win.
Charles Franklin, my fine guest, pollster extraordinaire. Let's talk about the guy who is on the ballot, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. How's Ron doing in the plus minus, the approval disapproval?
Yeah, let me say cares about you, because it contrasts interestingly with Evers. 39% say Johnson cares about people like them. 50% say he does not. Those are almost the inverse of Evers' numbers, but also for Johnson in 2016, shortly before his reelection, those numbers were 43% cares, 39% does not care. So that reflects a pretty substantial net minus 11 underwater on this question. On the favorability of how's he doing, 36% favorable, 46 unfavorable to him. And that is a couple of points better than where he was in February, where he was a net minus 12 in February, net minus 10 now. And that also, like with Walker's recovery, Johnson was deeply underwater on favorability in 2015, but in the spring of 16 started to move up. Now here we're just seeing a 2-point move in net favorability. That's not much, but it's not nothing. But we'll have to wait and see whether he can improve on these numbers as the campaign moves on, as his advertising kicks in, and whether he can pull that trick that he did in 2016 of managing to recover from being well underwater.
Charles Franklin, my fine guest, how about voter issues? What matters to the voters, according to the polling you've just dropped and we're sharing, going inside the numbers with our fair audience? But what do you think are the most important issues, according to current polling, amongst voters in Wisconsin?
We asked people how concerned they were about five different issues. Inflation overwhelmingly is the top issue. 69% very concerned about that. That's risen from like 38% last summer. So, and is up again from the previous poll by a little bit. Public education, though, is at 50% very concerned, the second highest. Illegal immigration, a good bit lower at 38%. Crime in your community, sort of surprisingly low at 27%. And the lowest of all, and the lowest yet recorded for this, is the coronavirus pandemic, only 22% saying they're very concerned about that. That one has followed cases. As they go up, people get more concerned. And now that they're down, less concerned. We've heard so much talk about crime as an issue, and maybe it will be. But when it comes to the issue of crime where you live, that clearly is not the top priority. But public education could be at 50%.
Charles, you had mentioned to me before we went on the air that crime in the community you live in is more of an issue where they listen to us in Milwaukee. Tell us how that expresses through the polling, sir.
Very much so. And I think this is an important policy issue for us all. Forget the politics of it for a minute. But how do we make the lives of people better? And this is an issue. Here we asked it a slightly different way. Do you feel safe from crime going about your daily activities, or do you worry about crime in your daily life? In the city of Milwaukee, 63% say they feel safe, but 37% say they are worried. That's almost doubled the next highest, which are in the Milwaukee suburbs, where 19% are worried. In the Madison area, this is the Madison media market, not just the city of Madison.
Sure.
17%. In Green Bay, 10% are worried, 90% feel safe. And in the north and west of the state, 14% worried, 86% feel safe. So I think you really do have to appreciate that Milwaukee is different in this.
Charles, I'd like to keep you over if I could and like to talk to you some about what I would describe as the big lie. But before we get there, I wanted to ask you, voter sentiment amongst the parties, amongst the partisans, do we see stronger sentiment, and were you trying to determine if one party or you know, Dems or Republicans are someone more engaged, to your opinion, Charles, based on the polling?
Our data show that they're equally engaged. 57% very enthusiastic to vote in the fall in both parties. Some national polling has found Democrats less engaged this year, but that's not what we're finding here. We had Republicans up maybe 2 or 3 points in the previous couple of polls, which is not a lot, but it's dead even now. And if you average the three, there's virtually no difference between them. There was little difference in 2020 either, but enthusiasm was about 10 points higher for both parties than in keeping with low turnout in a midterm.
Well, one of the issues I think that has been engaging to the right, I certainly know it's been engaging as a metric of media. I've seen right-wing talk radio get Goliath monstrous sort of ratings since the big lie has really been propagated. My words, not Charles Franklin's. My fine guest, he is a pollster extraordinaire from the Marquette University Law School polling outfit, and they drop new polls, and we always ask Charles to come around, and he generously has agreed to stick around for a conversation about what Crudy calls the big lie. Come back, more Devil's Advocates, a whopper of a Wednesday edition. My fine guest, Charles Franklin, sticking around.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Hump Day Edition. Got a fine guest. He is Charles Franklin, pollster extraordinaire, Marquette University Law School polling. They got a new one out today. And Charles, I use the vernacular. I call it the big lie. But we've got gubernatorial candidate Rebecca Clayfish saying, I believe today, well, I suspect the last election was rigged. And I suspect many Republicans feel the way that she at least expressed her opinion today. Charles, what is the confidence level on the last election, the 2020 presidential, when you polled the people, especially the Republicans? I guess I'm most curious about them.
Well, I think Rebecca Clayfish is reflecting the opinions within her party, but not in the electorate as a whole. 64% say they're either very or somewhat confident in the accuracy of the 2020 election. Just 35% are not too or not at all confident about the election. And that's a 2-to-1 balance that we've seen since we've been asking about this in 2021. But among Republicans, it's a very different story. There, 62% are not confident in the election outcome. Just 36% are. So really, you have a Republican Party that's nearly the mirror image of public opinion at large on this issue of the 2020 election. Democrats, perhaps because they won, are 94% confident in the outcome of 2020, but so are 59% of independents. So again, you see that the majority Republicans who are doubtful of the election are not out of step only with Democrats, but are out of step with independents as well.
Charles Franklin, I thought your polling outfit did a very clever ask, and the ask was, well, how confident were you in the spring 2022 elections? And of course, you've got the data. The people just express whether or not they had confidence issues with the 2020, the Trump election, or lack thereof, depending on your math. Charles, how did they answer? How are Wisconsinites feeling about the spring election?
And we asked this the same question wording about both of these, just referring to two different elections. The spring election was very much a different story. If let's go on the doubtful side for a second, 35% were doubtful about 2022. But on the April election, only 14% had doubts about it. And 84% were confident in the spring election. You know, what's different here? Well, we've had months and months and months of Donald Trump and many Republican leaders claiming that 2020 was fraudulent in some way or not accurate in some way. And Trump's followers accept that message and echo it. But we've not heard people of either party claiming that the April election this year was fraudulent, even though the procedures for it were largely the same. And we see a very different picture, 84% confidence, 14% doubts. Even among Republicans, where you might think that doubt would still linger, it's only 21% doubtful about the April election versus that 62% that were doubtful about 2020. So again, even within the Republican Party, where you might think electoral skepticism carries over, it's not nearly as prevalent. In fact, 76% of Republicans say they're confident about the April election. So I think there's a positive takeaway from this. Those who have worried that confidence in elections is broken and what does this mean for us as a society? Well, that confidence isn't broken. It's broken when your leaders tell you it's broken, but it's not broken in general, and it's not broken in the absence of a persistent rhetorical campaign to convince you that something's wrong.
Shocker that when Donald Trump's not on the ballot, people have more confidence. So that brings me to a natural question. I think, Charles, you polled about the Gableman investigation, the office of whatever, special counsel or whatever he's calling himself. Yeah. This investigation has lingered on and on. And are the people that you've polled in the state of Wisconsin, are they confident about the work product, about the outcome, about this guy, Gableman? What's your interpretation using the analytics and the empirical evidence, Charles?
Disapproval is 2-1 over bigger than approval. Approve is just 13%. Disapprove 27%, but maybe the shocker, 57% say they haven't heard enough about the Gableman investigation to have an opinion. This has not been lacking for news coverage, has not been lacking for drama around the Capitol, including Donald Trump this week calling for that investigation to be extended. So it's a pretty prominent thing, and yet 57% haven't heard enough to have an opinion. What's more stunning to me is, as we were just talking about this, Republicans are very dubious about the 2020 election, and whether that's because their leaders say so or because they think that independently, the fact is there's a lot of skepticism in the GOP about 2020. And yet Republicans are the least likely to be aware of the Gableman investigation. 64% of Republicans, two-thirds, say they haven't heard enough about it to have an opinion, even as two-thirds of Republicans are skeptical about the election outcome. So you would think the folks that were really concerned about that past election would also be paying a lot of attention to the investigation of it, but that's not the case. Now, Democrats aren't super aware either. 50% of them don't know enough about it, but still, that's half as opposed to two-thirds on the GOP side.
Charles, maybe a little much to ask, but did you cross-tab like the Rantham support with the Gableman investigation support? Is there any crossover, cross-pollination, if you would, Charles?
Well, there's certainly a little bit, but Rantham's numbers are so low in both in vote support and in the people that are aware of him, because he's still pretty invisible to most folks. There's not much of a relationship just because there's so few people that are aware of him.
I gotcha. Charles Franklin, any other takeaways our audience should be aware of?
I think that what we're seeing on the turnout side is pretty important. I want to make sure that we said this. I don't think we did, but within the Republican Party, those who are most skeptical about the election are much more enthusiastic about voting this fall. 69% very enthusiastic about among the least confident. Only 46% very enthusiastic among Republicans who are confident in the election outcome. So what does that mean? It means the primary may be more dominated by Trump supporting election skeptics, but it means for the fall that what happens to those Republicans who are not very enthusiastic, who may not be that excited about supporting an election skeptic in the fall. So I think there are some general election issues as well as some primary election issues. Anybody that's attended a Republican event lately doesn't need to be told by me that people are pretty upset and vociferous in the party base. So I think this fits very well with that. But we've talked a lot about what happens to the suburbs. What happens in November if they're not enthusiastic?
Charles Franklin, thank you so much. As always, more Devil's Advocates. Dom joins.